Welcome to Dot Game. In this episode, we're going to take a look at the basics of using Unity, including going over the UI, looking at the concepts, the core concepts that are involved in making a game, and then we're going to dive into setting up our scene. And the scene is going to be used for several future videos, so we're going to build off of this over the course of some time. We'll also take a very brief look at some of the scripting, more of like an introductory to kind of get you going so you can start to play around with Unity and some of the game logic that you can build off of it. So to get started, we can take a look at this project that I have set up. So I've already gone ahead and created some of the scene that we'll be working with. And we're going to build a little bit off of this scene. We'll talk about some of the components that are tied to it. So don't worry too much about the fact that some of it's already set up. Taking a step back, if you take a look at Unity, and this is a engine that you can go online and get, we've got several kind of panels that are set aside. So this top left one is known as the hierarchy, and this is basically a list of all of the objects that are sitting in your scene. So if we take a look, we have this well that's sitting right here. If I just click on it, you can see this environment node dropped down, and we have the well listed. So you can see that it's just literally a list of those game objects. If you look down, we have this project tab. This is basically a list of all of the assets that you have in your project file. So it might not be everything that's sitting in the scene, but it's a list of stuff that you are going to be working with in one way or another within your game. So I've already pre-populated this with everything that we're going to be working with in this episode. In the center here, we have the console. Now, this is going to output any error messages, any informational messages, things like that, that you would typically see when scripting or really if you happen to just run into any errors. There's also the animation tab, which we're going to not really look at too much in this episode, but probably the next one. This is where you can set up various types of animations. And then they also have the animator controller, which again, we're really not going to look up in this one, but this will let you kind of fine tune what animations would trigger when. So you can kind of set up parameters and build logic that basically dictates when and how an animation would look. Over on the right-hand side, we have the inspector. Now the inspector is basically a list of components that are tied to a specific game object. Now I know that that can sound a little bit confusing, so we'll explain what a game object is and what a component is momentarily. But for now, the key thing to just hone in on is this is where all of the components are that make up a particular game object. And then the last tab that we currently see, or I'm sorry, not the last tab, but another tab that we see is the navigation area. Now we're not going to touch too much on this in this episode, but the next episode is actually going to focus on player navigation. So we'll actually dive pretty deeply into this particular tab. So the last two that I wanted to go over is the scene view, which is this tab right here. And this is where basically you can go in and you can set up where your objects are, your game objects are in the scene as rendered by the, or viewable by the camera. And then the third, I don't know why I keep adding tabs, but the next tab is the game tab. And this is actually the view of the camera. So this is where we currently have the camera positioned in the scene, and this is what the players would actually look like, or look at. Up at the top, there's play, pause, and then next. So if we were to hit play, nothing's really going to happen because we don't have any actual game logic built into the scene, but we can see as soon as Unity decides to go, there it goes. That this is ultimately, again, what the player would see. You can't actually do anything yet, but we'll start to build that game logic out. All right. So kind of jumping into what a game object is, and then a quick overview of components. So the best way to think about a game object is it's basically an object that gets defined by its components. So what I mean by that is you can actually right-click on your hierarchy and do create empty. And that'll do is that'll create an empty game object. If we hop into our scene view, we can actually see this sitting in world space. There's nothing really tied to it. We can just kind of see the X, Y, and Z axis, but nothing else because there's nothing that's really set to render. This is quite literally an empty game object. If we look over at our components, there's the name, game object. And then it has this component called a transform. Now, every game object has this, and what it does is it defines its position, rotation, and scale as it relates to the game world. So in this case, it has a position of 48, 9, and really 0 point, or negative 0.44. We can adjust the position to be 0, 0, 0, and we can see that it kind of moved over to where a well is, which is basically our game world coordinates of 0, 0, 0. The rotation is also set to 0, 0, 0. If we were to rotate it, you really wouldn't notice much because, again, there's not much in the way of visibility. Same with scale. Its scale is 1, 1, and 1. We'll take a look at these properties and what they actually mean a little bit later. So this, like I said, is a game, is an empty game object, and those are pretty useful for various reasons. So for example, if I click on this environment game object, you'll notice it's got a name. I've changed the name from game object to environment, but it really only has the position, the rotation, and the scale. And at some point, I guess when I created this, I messed up the positioning. Usually I try to keep that at 0, but that's going to shift everything over, so I'm not really going to mess with that right now. But underneath it, you can see it's actually got quite a bit of stuff. So I've actually defined the environment's game object purpose as basically being the parent container for all of these little objects. Really, honestly, just because I didn't want to stare at a ginormous list in my hierarchy, I wanted things to be a little bit more organized. However, that does let me do a little bit more fine control. So for example, if I wanted for some reason to shift all of this stuff over, instead of clicking on each individual item and just moving it, right now I have the ground and I'm just shifting it over. If I wanted to move everything, I can click on the parent and move that instead. So there's a lot of practical purposes also for doing the hierarchy like I've done. And that stuff will become a little bit more obvious as we start to progress through it. So if we take a look at one more game object, again, talk about the component notion. So remember I said the camera was up here kind of looking roughly down here. You can see in this view, or if we pop over to the game view, you can kind of see that it's here. Really, though, what a camera is it's a game object that's essentially empty, that has a series of components that define its purpose in the game world as the camera. So this particular component right here is one of them along with the other ones. We're not going to dive into each individual component right away because that would just take quite some time. Instead, we're going to slowly explore what the different components are through each of the episodes, and we'll build off of them some. So, taking a step back, I'm going to go ahead and delete this empty game object. I jumped ahead. Let me add that back in. You can actually view a list of all of the possible components and start to play around with them in this Add Component button on the inspector. So if I click that and then I remove what I had been typing in at some point in time, you can see quite a large list of various components that can be added. So we've got things anywhere from mesh renders and filters, which will make a little more sense as we go, to physics, to audio, all sorts of stuff that'll kind of help you get going with defining, again, a game object's purpose in the game. All right, so that's a brief overview of the UI and some of the concepts behind it. We'll talk about scripting in a bit, but for now, let's go ahead and build up our scene. So what we're going to do over the course of several episodes is we're going to kind of slowly build off of, or build up, I guess, an RPG-style game. Honestly, I'm not entirely sure how far we'll take it, but I do have some plans in mind. I've been dying to build out an inventory system and a merchant stuff, so I think we'll probably end up doing some of that. Before we dive into it, we need to actually get some models out there and build out the scene that we'll be working with to start. So, what I have here is, under this folder of models, I've got a few things. In particular, I have this wizard, or witch. I guess I called her two different things. I was calling her a wizard, and then everyone else kept calling her a witch because of her hat. But this is her. So it's a model that I just started working on. So she actually does not have any animations or anything tied to her yet, but that's fine for what we're going to be doing. If you drag her and drop her out just into the environment, either you can drag straight into the scene or you could drop into the hierarchy and that'll put it at 0, 0. I dropped her in the scene. But if we click, we can see the position in that, position, rotation, and scale have altered. If we set it again to 0, 0, which we really don't want, but that'll put her right about here. We'll just move her a little bit forward. This ensures she's at least sitting on the ground and is positioned properly. You can see she has an animator component on that. I started to work on the animations and I rigged her up, but she actually isn't ready to go. So we're gonna just remove that component because there's no point in having it just yet. So we have our witch, and we're gonna rename this to be the player. This is going to be the character that we'll control. And then what we want to do is the first video series that we're going to end up doing is going to have the player is going to be able to interact with a storekeeper. We're going to have something pop up. They'll be able to do some shopping. In particular, they're going to buy this cute little hat that I also made. It's our little wizard hat right here. And then we'll end up putting that on their head and showing it in their inventory as well. So for now, let's go ahead and build our storekeeper. So we only really have the one model that we're going to be working with, but we are going to retexture, recolor that model to make them look like a different person. So what you can do is click on player, and then if you hit Control D, that's going to duplicate that object. So if we move this, we'll notice that we now have two. My word of advice is be careful with that, because you get into the habit of hitting Control D in other places, and in Windows that will delete your files, which I've learned the hard way not to do. So you have to try and break that habit if you end up getting too relying on it a little too much. So we're going to rename this to be Merchant, and then I'm actually going to position. She's going to be an art. She's going to be a cool, sleek cave merchant person here. So we'll put her here. When you rotate, you have a couple of options. So we can use these to kind of move. Obviously, you can kind of set these parameters. You can also hover. And it switches to, I don't know how well you can see that, but it kind of switches to two little arrows. And what you can do is you can kind of drag those. So you can see her pivoting just a hair. So if we pull it back a bit, I think actually I'm going to want her, not on the Z. Why? We're going to rotate her on the Y, make her face. That's about 130. I like whole numbers. That just makes working with things a lot easier. Negative 28, so we'll just round everything. And if you hold down, so if you actually, when you go to move, if you hold down the Control button and then drag it to the side, it's actually going to snap it to the grid, which can also be quite useful. So the other thing is, again, she still kind of looks similar, so we want to change that up. And the way that we can do that is we can work with what's known as a material that's on this particular object. So if we expand her hierarchy, so again, it's very similar in that this top one is just a container object to organize her. Underneath it, we have body, and that's basically the mesh that's tied to her. And then we can see that there are these things right here, the skin, the dress base, the boots, the gem, the dress trim, and the hair. What these are these are actually materials. And what a material is a definition of how a surface renders. And I know that's kind of vague, and that's vague in the sense that you can define it in quite a different way, several different ways that kind of make it up. So the first is a shader. And what a shader is it's basically a script that calculates the color of each individual pixel. Unity itself comes with several shaders that are available, the standard being kind of the most commonly used one, but you can start to write your own shaders, and that's actually an area that I do want to dive into as well. So hopefully we'll have some tutorial videos that will teach a little more about writing up the shaders. And then the third thing that kind of will make up a material is known as a texture. And in this case, I actually don't have any textures tied to it. I'd actually originally gone down that route, and I wanted to make it so that it was easier to switch the coloring of the model without having to redo the textures. And so instead of doing that, I actually just have a color that's being applied. So real quick, I'm going to kind of back it up a bit so you can kind of hopefully see this a little more. I don't think I can make much. I don't think it's going to let me make much space, unfortunately. You know what, we'll do this. We'll kind of move this person. So I want to show you something that's kind of key when working with materials, which is while we have two different players and we have basically two different objects, here, materials are actually shared. So what I mean by that is if I click this merchant and I adjust the scale and I adjust it to 2, you notice that the player didn't change. That's because they are two different instances of the game object. However, if I were to click body and then click the skin. Let's do the hair so it's a little more obvious. And then I click on the hair. If I were to change it to something a little bit crazy, like hot pink, you'll see that it's actually changing on both models. That's because both of these are sharing the same material. Now, we can fix this relatively easy by just adjusting what's on this this merchant. So if we go ahead and collapse all of these models, and we go under this prefab folder. I'll talk about what a prefab is in a second. But right now, I'll skip over that. So I'm going to demonstrate it. And I just add a new folder called merchant. What I can do is hop into models, go under wizard, and then these are a list of all of the materials that we just looked at. So if I were to keep the hot pink hair, or really just change it here, we'll see that it applies to the model. What we can do is we can duplicate these materials and then change just the ones that we would want changed for our merchant. So with this folder selected, I'm going to hit Control D. And that's going to create a Materials 1 folder, and I'm just going to drag it under this Merchant folder. And I'm going to rename it, be just Materials. And then I'll click it. So what we're going to do is we're actually going to change her outfit altogether. So under the boots, if we click this color, we'll highlight it, and we'll do, let's see if I'm actually on it. My name lock was on. I don't know why it wasn't picking that up. 584632. So we're going to go for a bit of a brown color on her boots. So the reason it hasn't changed is because this new material that we just duplicated isn't actually on the model. They're still sharing the original one. So if I drag this up, you can actually see it happens on the grass, but if I drag it straight to the boots, it'll change the color of the boots, and then if we look at the model, it'll change, where are you, boots? It'll change the one that's there. So that one has a kind of our brown one, and then this player, as you can see, as the original one. So we're able to kind of separate out the coloring. Now you can see this as lending itself really well to if you're creating a game and you want the player to be able to pick any hair color or pick a series of hair colors or kind of really whatever. What you can do is tap into the material color and use that to just change it. So you don't necessarily even have to make different materials if the one that you have on the actual model is the one that you're okay with changing. So I'm just going to go through and I'm going to change a couple of these. C8A28. And then we'll go and we'll drag them onto that. So the base of the dress, this is going to be maybe a darker brown. And then I want this trim to be a green. So you can, of course, color pick, but I didn't. At least I looked up my colors ahead of time and wrote them down. And then I think I forgot to drag her. I feel like that's everything. And everything, gem, hair, hat. Oh, the hat. So I actually want to give her a hat. So I'm going to color this. I'm gonna actually like the hat to match the dress's base. So we'll do that. So there's our merchant. Now, this merchant is going to be swanky. That's the word I'm looking for. So we're going to give him a hat. And this hat is, we're going to child it. So when I talked about the difference of like the hierarchies and it being a parent, what you can do is you can child objects underneath them, again, so that they move with them. Now, we want this hat to move with the merchant no matter where we put it. So if I just drag that game object down underneath it, it'll put the hat as it, so or as a child under it. So if I were to move, they're going to move together, which is exactly what we want, except for we also want the hat on their body. So if we move it to 0, 0, that's going to position it at the feet. We'll drag it up and position it ever so lightly on the head. Something like that. A little off. It's okay. Oops. Ah. I think that should be good. Let's see if we're poking through. I can see a little bit of her hair, so we'll just a bit up. Okay, so that looks, whoops, relatively good. So a few shortcut keys that are quite handy. So when you're moving around, right click to move forward and back, you just use the arrow keys, position this way. To move a little bit faster, hold down shift while you use the arrow keys, and that's going to move you around the environment. To zoom in on an object, push F, and that'll hone in on whatever game object that you have selected. Okay, so the last thing is, of course, we need to change the hat's material to be our brown. Here we go. And you know, I don't like the hat rotating that particular direction. So, let's see. I think I can do, oops. Oh, geez. Y is what I always do that. We're going to have to move that up. I just feel like the little bobby thing should be in the back. Okay, so that's our merchant. Now, I mentioned that we were going to talk a little bit about what a prefab is. So I've gone ahead and I've created the folder already, and I've set these under it. But we haven't made any actual prefabs. Basically what, or really we haven't turned the merchant, I guess I should say, into the prefab. What a prefab is it's a way to kind of save, lack of a better way to put it, a configuration of a game object. So, for example, we have this witch. This merchant. Let's say we want to use this merchant in several scenes. This exact same one that's colored the exact same way. The easiest way to do that would be to create basically a saved kind of version or configuration of how we've set this game object up. Now, to do that, what you can do is you can actually just select your game object and then drag it into really your prefabs folder. You want to try and keep that relatively organized and then let it go. And that'll actually create a prefabbed instance of it. And what that does is that also creates a link between this object that I have in my scene and my prefab object. So if I wanted to, say, make a change that would apply to all of the game objects, I can really just do it on this prefab level, and that'll apply down. So again, we'll take a look at the scale, because that's kind of the easiest thing. If I change the scale here, again, not on what's in actually my hierarchy, but on this prefab, you can see that it actually affected my game object. So let's actually pull out a couple more of these. So we've got two here. I'll turn this back to one. So the prefab itself is set to kind of default. And if we click on the merchant, so again, we click on the instance of the prefab out here, and we alter that, only that instance was adjusted, not our other version of it. Now, what you can do, so if we're working with this prefab over here, and we decide we make a bunch of changes, and we're like, oh, I love that change, and I want that to apply to everyone, you can still do it from this view, and you can do it by clicking this apply button right here. You can also revert your changes back by clicking this version, or this button right here. So if we wanted to apply it, I'd hit that, and you can see that it basically applied all of those settings to the prefab, which then pushed it down to our other version, our other instance of that game object. So bringing it back a bit, we'll again move that to one. We're going to get rid of our second merchant. Don't care about her. That's really kind of all we need to do for the scene setup. You can kind of see that's how we dragged the objects out. That's pretty self-explanatory. The only thing I wanted to talk about was really how I created the ground that you could sit at. So it's actually quite easy to do. Unity has a series of game object types that you can initialize or add into it on your own. So if you right-click in the hierarchy, you have a bunch of options. One is create empty, so that's kind of what I was doing a little bit earlier, where I was just creating blank game objects. They also have pre-set up ones, so we can create a cube, a sphere, a capsule, all sorts of stuff, some of which we'll end up talking about pretty soon. There's also 2D objects, so you can create a sprite. We'll look at that, I think, in the next video. The other thing is it has a series of UI, and at some point, probably two or three videos from now, we'll be taking a look at setting up some UI stuff. So we'll dive pretty deep into this as we set up the screens for purchasing things. So again, kind of stepping back and looking at how this grass was made, really all I did is I created a 3D object, a plane. So you can kind of see it's actually up high. It's really not very big, but there it is, and it's at a strange location. So if we do 0, 0, it's gonna, again, put it in the well, because that's where our 0, 0 is. So we'll just move it up since we're gonna take a look at it. You'll notice that it actually provided a default material in here, and it's one that we really can't mess with. In order to change how this looks or the coloring of it, we need to create our own material. And that's what I did already. So that's how I have this grass one. I just had created a materials folder. I right-clicked, I did create, and then somewhere in here, there it is, I clicked material. And that'll just create a blank one, name it whatever you want, Grasso 2. And then again, it's the same stuff that we kind of looked at where you can set the coloring. So we'll have some red grass and you can drag it into the object. And if we look at our plane, we can see that it's no longer the default and now it's grass 02. So pretty simple. Really what I did, so you can see mine's quite a bit larger. It was just that I changed the scale to be 40-40. And this one, our new plane object is sitting at 111. So really, just to adjust it, it's really the same thing. I'm gonna delete this out. All right, so that's a quick and dirty overview of setting up the scene. The last thing that I wanted to take a look at in this video is just kind of the basics of getting started with creating a script and doing that. So if we click on, actually really what I'm gonna do, because what we're gonna create is not anything we're gonna keep. I'm gonna create an empty game object that we're gonna delete out. We're just gonna call this test object. And really it doesn't matter where its positioning is. I'm gonna set it to 0, 0. So this game object is not gonna visually represent anything in the game, but it is going to act as basically our test object or test script holder. We call this test manager if we want it. So I find creating like an empty game object with scripts tied to it to be particularly useful when you're creating like a game manager. So for us, when we do multiplayer games, we tend to have a game manager that gets added in that kind of handles the overall scene logic. Well, not just for multiplayer games, for really any game, we end up going down that route in some manner. Okay, so to create a script, you have several different options. So you can do add component, add new script, and then pick your language and type in your name, and it'll add the script in. I believe we'll just add it into your base folder. I prefer a little bit more organization, so you can also right-click on wherever it is that you want it, go to create, and then do C# scripts. And then lastly, if you're using Visual Studio, you can create the script straight out of Visual Studio. For now, I'm just going to create it here. So we'll just call this test. To open up Visual Studio and begin scripting, again, you have a couple of options. We can just double click this script, and then that'll actually cause your IDE, either Visual Studio or Unity also comes with Mono Develop, to automatically open. Alternately, you can click Assets at the top, and then you can go to Open C# Project. It doesn't really matter which, we'll just double click. It should take a couple of seconds for Unity to generate the Visual Studio projects, and there we have it. So this is our script. And then it puts in a couple things to start. I believe there's actually something that you can go and edit in the template. I read about it quite some time ago, but I never got around to actually doing it, which is quite funny because it would save me enormous amounts of time if I did. But you can see when you create through Unity, or if you were to do it using in Visual Studio using the Unity Project Explorer, it'll basically set up your script so that you're automatically inheriting from something called mono behavior. And then it sets up the usings to be more appropriate with what you would typically do for your average script. So mono behavior is actually required when you want to put a script on a game object. And this is actually going to open up the ability, I guess for lack of a better way to put it, to work with various event functions, such as start and update. And we'll actually take a look at a couple more called awake, on enable, and then on disable. And there's many more that you can actually work with. In fact, if you're in Visual Studio, you can right click or Control Shift M to implement mono behaviors. And what this does is actually provides a list of all of the mono behaviors that you can work with. When you're getting started with Unity, this is incredibly helpful. I still, every once in a while, encounter something that I either forgot wasn't there or I just never really worked with when working with the mono events. And even when you start to get into the networking, that actually opens up a whole other set of stuff that you end up working with. So this is actually very, very handy. What you can do, so you can actually go through and check which ones you want to work with. So like I said, we're going to work with Awake, we're going to work with On Enable, and then we're going to work with On Disable. We need these three to get added in. Oh, I assumed that would remember what I had clicked, but it didn't. That's no problem. The other way that you can do it is you can do quick mono behaviors, and this will add it in. So you do On Enable, and you can actually do, you can do cases too. So it has the notion of camel casing for even quickerness, or quicker typing, I guess. Quickerness, I don't think that's a word, but it is now. We'll type in our other one that we want. And then kind of a stickler for stuff to be organized a certain way. I don't know why that's not. I guess I accidentally copied a blank line there. There we go. Okay, so I'm going to organize these. I personally, when I'm working with scripts, I like my awakes and my starts to be at the top along with really update. And then after that, it tends to get a little bit more chaotic. Before this, I actually want to organize these in the basically the order of execution that we're going to see. So we're going to, and I'll demonstrate this, but we're going to see at what point awake, on enable, start, update, and on disable actually run when you're working with code. In order to do this, the easiest thing is to have it write something out on the console. So you remember looking at Unity, it said that when you attach stuff and you're working with it, your errors that you would maybe normally see in your IDE will actually show up here. So you can play your game and see as errors are happening, which is very useful. You also can do debugging and all sorts of stuff as well. So if we look at the script, we have awake. Awake really is the only one that has anything right now, and that's okay for the time being. And then we've kind of got our stubs, if you will, for the rest. Now, if we pop over and we hit play, we're going to see nothing is going to happen. And that's because our script is not actually attached to a game object, which means it's not actually running. We haven't created an instance of that script. So if we click on our test manager, you can either drag the script over, or you can do add component and then search for the script and add it that way. By adding it to an active game object in the scene, that's going to cause our script to run. So when I push play, now there's a little caveat to that, and we'll look at that in a second. So if I push play, we can see that the awake log that we had written in is here. And that's great. That's exactly what we would expect to see. Now, if we take a look, I'm just going to copy, and we do on enable. I'm going to add on enable and start. And again, we'll kind of look at these and when they trigger here momentarily. So right now we have code for awake, on enable, and start. Everything else is not executing anything that we can see. So if I push play, we're going to see all three of these go. So we saw on awake happen, on enable, and start. These are initialization methods. And what that means is each of them actually trigger at different points in time when the script is running. So awake is called, as you can see, before start and before enabled, and it always runs when a game object is instantiated, regardless on if it's actually disabled. So what I mean by that is if I uncheck this test button right next, or this checkbox next to the word test, I'm actually disabling the script by default. So that means when the game goes to run and that game object gets put in it, I've said, script, you're not enabled, don't do anything. What actually happens is awake will run, but we see that on enable and start do not run. So that kind of comes back to awake will basically always run when your game object is initialized. Oops. Actually, with it still running, we can see this. Now, if I check, so the nice thing is when you're working with Unity and you're playing your game, you can actually manipulate in the inspector various properties and things and turn your scripts on, and technically we could change the sizing of our person if we wanted to kind of see how things behave in the world. And then when you don't When you stop playing the game, it'll actually revert almost all of the settings back. I think its materials will not actually revert back. That'll save it, if I recall correctly. Okay, so looking at test, if I click this checkbox again to enable it, we see that on enable ran and start ran. So again, it has to do with when you check it. Now, if I uncheck it and check it again, we can see on enable ran again. The reason is we're triggering that on enable event every time the script gets enabled, but we see that start only ran. So start only ran the one time. Now, start is similar to awake in that it only runs once, but it only runs when it's actually been enabled. So you can hone in your stuff on awake for things that you want to run kind of regardless on if the game or the script itself is actually enabled. And then start would be your logic that you needed to run at the beginning only when your script is enabled. I tend to populate the on enabled logic to be stuff that I want to run every single time I've toggled my script. So the last one that I want to look at before we dive into update is on disabled. So this is basically the counterpart to on enabled. It's going to run when we uncheck this box to disable it. So I'm going to unplay this. I'm going to on disable, change it so that we have this coming in. And I'll play it again. So if we take a look, again, we have awake. We'll go ahead and check this. We see on enable and start. If I uncheck this, we're going to see on disable trigger again, and then we'll able to toggle back and forth between them. So again, this is a good place to put game logic that you want to have happen before the script has been completely disabled. So the last kind of basic area that we're going to look at is update. Now, before I jump into it, it is worth noting that this is not the only place for you to put your game logic. There are two other ones called fixed update and late update. I'm not going to dive too much into each one of those in this video, but it is worth calling out that they do exist and they do have purposes within the game logic. But as you're getting going and first using Unity, it's okay to kind of hone in on just the update method for your game logic. Now, what this method is it's something that's actually going to trigger in a sort of loop, and it's going to run once per frame. And that does mean that it is solely frame rate dependent. So if you happen to be pulling very few frames and you have game logic sitting in update, you're going to see that happen versus maybe pulling a game that's got 60 frames per second. So when you're playing around with physics, a really good spot for you to do that type of stuff is actually in fixed update, which again, I'm going to stay away from, but just keep that in mind. And if you have a need to go and work with it, go take a look at that. And down underneath this video in the descriptions, I'll have some reference areas for you to go and browse. And then, of course, on the GitHub page where you can go and download all of these project files, there'll also be a couple references for you to go and take a look at what each of those methods are. And then there's also an order of execution where you can kind of dive into it. So coming back to the update method, we can do to kind of, again, illustrate this. We'll go and we're going to put a debug log. And we'll be able to see this happen a lot more frequently than the others. So again, our script is disabled. We'll enable it. And we can see if we push pause, you can actually see that update has run quite a bit of times. So this is great, really, again, for any game logic that you want to happen per frame. So let's say you want to monitor to see if somebody's pushing a button to move the character around. Update is a great method to do something like that in because it's going to check pretty frequently. Now, on the flip side, you want to be very careful about your game logic so that you're not doing a constant compute that maybe doesn't need to happen there but needs to happen a little bit more infrequently. So putting stuff in update can be very useful, but it can also be very dangerous on the performance of your game. So you want to try and pick where you go carefully, I guess, in that sense. So that about wraps up what we're going to be covering for this Unity beginner video. In the next video, we're going to dive more deeply into the navigation aspect. So we're actually going to build out kind of the point-and-click style where you have a character selected, you click somewhere on the environment, it's going to navigate to it. So we'll build more off of this scene and dive a little bit more into coding and then explore the navigation and pathfinding features that Unity has to offer. So thanks, and see you next time.